Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Mr. McDonald, is it?
Yes.
Thank you. We've read your original written submission. Thank you for providing that. You don't need to read that out to us.
No, I won't.
You're welcome to speak to it and go through any kind of presentation that you have for us.
First of all, have we got any pictures?
Yep, got a couple of photos.
It might be interesting for Jeanette to have a look at a few pictures. I'll just do a, that's the farm there, Gavinwood Farm. I'll speak to this later. But if we can go through, we've got a short video. That's the farm looking towards the west.
Three videos.
One, two, and three, running streams. Which one did you want to look at?
Just put one up and I'll talk to it as we progress. Okay. That's in October after a flood rain. In the middle of lambing, so this block here is stocked at 10 to the head there of lambing ewes. So of course you could say that water looks pretty good and the banks look very intact. It doesn't always tell the whole story, of course. But that's what our waterways look like, and that's in the summer after a flood rain. So they're what they call the ephemerals. So very short and sharp. So look, if you don't mind, that's a creek coming out, and have a look at where is the creek. Banks are pretty well intact, pretty well covered. Mm-hmm. So that's just the way we do things on our farm. I just thought I would just mention that there. So look, regarding my submission, I've just got a wee bit of a something to read out here.
Yeah,
if you just give me a wee bit of space for this, that would be good. So
yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Good morning and thank you for this opportunity to speak to you on behalf of Gavinwood Farm and the McDonald family. My family has farmed in Dipton since 1897. In 1963, my parents struck out on their own and bought Gavinwood Farm in the Caroline Valley. The farm has remained in its original form since its inception. Two generations of McLeods, one of McIntosh, and now two generations of McDonald's has ensured Gavinwood is in a good heart. I'm thankful of the work from these previous owners, which is visible on a daily basis. But what is most impressive, which will lead on to my submission, is the foresight they showed. They did not only for themselves, but for the future, which is very clear from what they have left behind. I originally intended to address the panel, like many others, questioning the detail around prescriptive rules and then going on to support rules that align with my own self-interest. I personally struggle to a point of frustration with my fellow farmers' short-termism. That is the inability to see beyond the now. My farming colleagues, by opposing this plan, all the while believing that this will severely impact on their way of life for them and their families, need to understand the very opposite is true. If we start this journey in a limp-wristed manner, we are putting at risk the very way of life we currently enjoy. What we don't quite understand yet is that the next generation will have very different farming models and systems. These will be systems which operate within limits. Our environmental aspirations as a region have tracked alongside our overall declining freshwater quality. It wasn't long ago we had a target of a 20% improvement. This was revised down to a 10% improvement. Until today, our aspiration is at very best is to maintain. Does it seem fair that my generation of farmers, many who have amassed considerable wealth, either directly or indirectly on the back of land intensification, refuse to acknowledge any negative consequences and then obstruct to a point that we push the responsibility of cost of transition onto our next generation? It's happened on our watch. We have the duty of care to take responsibility for our freshwater. The forming consensus is that the transition from our current farming methods to the systems of the future, whatever they might be, will be challenging for the region under a more regulated umbrella. With this in mind, I would like to submit to the panel my belief that this plan needs to remain intact. To weaken this interim plan would not create the momentum needed to take us into the limit setting process in Southland's freshwater management units. If the council was serious about creating a self-perpetuating environment of on-farm best practice, then surely this plan will set us on this pathway. The plan's main device, which is physiographics, has been widely criticised. Yes, it does focus on the areas that need more attention than others, but surely isn't this the correct process? To use information to identify where and how the resources are to be allocated. If this is preferable to a blanket application. Above all, this approach is common sense. In saying this, I do recognise many farmers in these sensitive zones, through no fault of their own, find themselves in this very difficult situation. The discussion around compensation or rating relief package during this period of transition may well take place further down the track. As we move past this interim plan, the future economic benefits will become more apparent through the Southland Economic Project, I hope. We must ensure that Southland has future access to any value opportunities that may arise or indeed we choose to pursue. To simply continue down the track of getting more lambs, more milk solids per cow, or growing a bigger fodder beet crop will not be sufficient in the future. The costs of production are prohibitive to the small production gains that will be open to us in the future. Increasing the value of our produce while incurring modest cost is the way forward. Access to high-wage economies of the world and their consumers is taken for granted and is largely secured for the time being on the back of our 100% pure brand. When you fail to reinvest in brands, they stop producing and eventually fail. Our environment is our key trading attribute that gets us into all the exclusive global clubs in the world. This is at national level, but if we get this right, we have the potential, for example, to leverage off Southland's environmental excellence to create a specific Southland produce story so as to ascend even further up that value chain. The alternative is to fail, producing commodities, exporting base ingredients, competing solely on price with massive low wage, low compliance and low dollar exporting nations. From 1993 to 2014, Southland's stock units have increased by 1.6 million. While we seem keen to talk about fencing waterways and planting trees, this is the low hanging fruit. Diffuse pollution through the soil profile that makes its way into our waterways will be the hard nut to crack. Why? Because this discussion leads to an uncomfortable area, that is reducing one's nutrient footprint, which invariably leads to reducing intensity, which in turn leads to reduced profitability, which is reflected then in farm values. This is the fear, I believe, for many. In time, these sensitive areas in Southland will have more challenges in adapting their systems. But if great care is given by the regulators during this transition, they will emerge in a strong position. Our responsibilities are clear. Nationally, our waterways under Farmers Watch account for 40% of the total freshwater rivers, while urban areas sit around the 3-4%. While we are quick to point the finger at the cities, the rural communities will have to face the fact that we will have to do most of the heavy lifting to do with regards to improving water quality. The late Sir Peter Alworthy was one of New Zealand's most respected farming leaders who helped guide agriculture through one of its most turbulent times. Most could only see dark days ahead, and the future seemed very bleak indeed. Sir Peter was a visionary who displayed a high level of what I call transgenerational thinking. He often commented about the rollback of subsidies. We may not see it now, but in time, being able to stand on our own two feet in a global sense as farmers will be of great benefit. Subsidies distort market signals and fail to drive innovation and excellence. Truly wise work and courageous thinking at the time. Of course, he was proven to be correct. I believe we're at similar crossroads, which demands comparable thinking. To conclude, when asked by my great future grandchildren, if you knew you had to change all those years ago to secure our future, why didn't you? I most likely will roll out the usual line and say we made the best decisions with the information we had at the time. But of course that would be a lie, because we have the information now that tells us we must change what we are doing. Sometimes extraordinary moments come and not the time of one's choosing. Your decisions regarding this plan and your collective decisions within the next decade will have far-reaching social and economic impacts, which we are only now starting to understand. I'm not overselling the fact that we are highly dependent on our rural economy in Southland to provide us with the standard of living we have come to expect. With this in mind, it's the courage and foresight to do the right thing for the future, as opposed to doing the popular thing for the present. So thank you very much.
Thank you for that. You've obviously spent a lot of time putting that very thoughtful discussion together. Are you happy to leave that with our secretary so we can have copies on it?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much. Are you happy now if we go to questions?
Yeah.
Yep. Roy, to start with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one, I'm just going back to your original submission. You're in 25A2, which talks about cultivation over 20 degrees. I pick up by your comments that you're really suggesting if there's a threshold, then there needs to be a consent process put in place, and you're referring to mechanical cultivation.
Yeah. Yeah, look, it's fair to say, Lord, that when I wrote that submission, it's probably not quite a year ago, and I've had a bit of a change of thinking, as you can probably pick up from that, because I sort of understood that everyone will be talking about that, and
yeah,
it'll be in your dreams at night. It's such a big topic. So I thought, well, let's everyone deal with that. But I just wanted to give a bit of an overview of where I saw things.
Well, I really appreciate your overview, and it's great that the chairman's asked for a copy because I want to reread that. I think there's some good thoughts in there. But I just want to pick up the principle that you're suggesting here, and I think your comments back it up, that there is a stage, whatever that stage is, that you're actually better to go through a consenting process to protect the environment for future generations than what you are to have everything in a permitted activity. I think that's what I'm picking up. Is that correct?
No, there's been a lot of talk around the consenting process, and of course it's a very foreign process to most farmers. They've never had any barriers in their way to anything. That's been our that my farm's my castle. And I've seen the shocked faces come into meetings and just can't believe it. That, and it's a lot of concerns around it. And of course, when you use the word consent, that means that people think they're going to get turned down straight away.
Thank you, Beth. Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. I don't have any questions, but can I just commend you for your philosophical overview, which I'll enjoy reading again as well. Yeah.
Probably a bit different era, was it?
It was, but it was very, very interesting.
No questions from me either, but thank you. Yeah.
No questions, Peter, thank you very much.
Very good, thank you.
Yep, thank you very much.
Cheers.